Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is produced in association with Jazz Times. Vocalist Judy Wexler shoots through life with an enviable enthusiasm. She majored in psychology and theater at UC Santa Cruz and immediately on graduating decided a life as a psychologist was not for her, but a life in the theater was. She moved to San Francisco, became a street juggler, formed her own theater company, sang, did Shakespeare, and had a ball. In a jazz world that often focuses on vocal acrobatics, Judy is a refreshingly straightforward interpreter of song, using her acting experience and soulful focus to bring out the meaning she finds in her favorite music. Judy's CD, Crowded Heart, showcases this attitude. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Judy and I recorded the following conversation in Santa Monica, California, in January 2019. I started by asking if her decision to major in theater and psychology was a conscious connection between the two disciplines.
Weirdly enough, all of us were on the short side. So, and we were all, you know, in those times, it was about improv, it was about, you know, just kind of being crazy. He brought in the acting teacher brought in Lee Brewer, the experimental theater artist from New York, and we worked with him a little bit. So it was all kind of all over the place. We worked on Shakespeare. We worked, you know, on more experimental theater. So what we ended up doing with these three other women, and we started a group called Caught in the Act, a theater collective of four short women. And obviously it was, you know, it was comedy, but there was some heavy, deep stuff too. Since I played piano, I did the accompaniment, we sang, I had learned juggling from one of the members who, you know, the Flying Karamazov brothers went to UC Santa Cruz, so we would sometimes juggle with them. And when we moved to San Francisco, we would go to Golden Gate Park and do these lines of juggling clubs, which was kind of amazing. When I think back, I'm like, I can't believe that I actually did that, because I can't even imagine juggling a club right now. It's
fantastic.
It's not that easy.
And it was also a great time to be in San Francisco.
Oh my God.
A wacky time,
wacky,
right?
Wacky time.
Wow.
You know, so it was the late 70s.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, after the flower power, you know, yeah, hippie hill time, but it was still a great time.
I'm always drunk in San Francisco. I always stay out of my mind. But if you've been to San Francisco, they say that things like this go on all the time. Never happens nowhere else. Maybe it's the air. Can't really seem to help myself. And what's more, I don't care. I'm always drunk in San Francisco. I'm never feeling any pain. But tell me, why does San Francisco, just like a lover's kiss, go to my brain. I guess it's just the mood I'm in that acts like alcohol, because I'm drunk in San Francisco. I get stoned in San Francisco. Yes, I'm drunk in San Francisco, and I don't drink at all.
Carmen McRae, a favorite of my guest, vocalist Judy Wexler. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired.
Because this is a show about inspiration, I'm always fascinated about how people bring all this together, and you have such a wide variety of things that you did creatively then and that you do now. And how do you think all of that influenced how you pursue what you do now? I'm fascinated with that. Well, interestingly enough, Alan, my husband, Alan Wexler, he was my boyfriend right after I graduated from UC Santa Cruz and moved to San Francisco. It was 1 year had passed. And in 1 year, I met the man I was going to spend the rest of my life with. So we were young in our, I was in my early 20s. And he had just moved from New York. And one of his very close friends was a huge jazz fan and turned Alan on to just amazing jazz artists. And so when I was with him, he was like, oh, check out Dexter Gordon, check out Coltrane, check out Miles, check out this, check out that. So he had a record collection of a jazz record collection, but he had an even bigger cassette tape collection. Mm. That was my basic exposure.
Did you love jazz right off? Did you take to it right away?
I did take to it right away. I don't know that I understood it at all, but I don't have any memory of not liking anybody. I liked everything that
I saw. And what was one of the first things you heard?
We went to the Great American Music Hall and saw Sarah Vaughan, which was absolutely amazing.
Have you met old Jones? Someone said as we shook hands, he was just old Jones to me. Then I said, old Jones, you're a guy who understands. I'm someone who must be free. And all at once I lost my breath, and all at once was scared to death, and all at once I owned the earth and sky. Now I've met old Jones, and we'll keep on meeting till we die. Shaboom do weep do weep do weep ba shoot it do you deep down sire ya ba hulu weep double do weep. He was just old Jones to me. Say baby ha baby da baby do baby do baby do shabari ya ba ba wa ba we we. I'm someone who must be free. And all at once I lost my breath, and all at once was scared to death, and all at once I owned the earth and the sky. Now I'm ahead of Jones, and we'll keep on meeting till we die.
Oh, Jones and I. Speaking of all the amazing people that you've gotten to hear, you brought me a Blossom Dearie track that yes. I've never heard before. Talk about this track, because I'm a huge Blossom fan.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, no, I loved it.
This track is Love is a Necessary Evil. It was written by Marvin Fisher and Jack Siegel, who maybe their biggest claim to fame was When Sunny Gets Blue. Now, they probably made all their money from When Sunny Gets Blue, I'm thinking. And Love is a Necessary Evil, so that's an obscure song. I love it for a few different reasons. First of all, I got to meet Jack Siegel. He came to a gig of mine. It was actually one of my very first gigs. He was a very, very nice man, and he has become one of my very favorite lyricists. I thought his lyrics were brilliant.
And I love this.
And
this
Love is Necessary Evil has brilliant lyrics. They're hard to memorize, but I remember memorizing these lyrics because I did record this song myself on my debut CD, Easy in the Heart, and in a very different way. But so I love the lyrics. I love her delivery of it, and I love that it's an obscure song, that it's, you know, that because that's my thing. I like the more obscure material. So this, to me, it's everything I like in this one track.
Love is a necessary evil, a very contrary, hereditary evil. Can't live with it, can't live without it, can't do a doggone thing about it. You want the pleasure, you've got to take the pain. Love is a necessary evil, an evolutionary interplanetary evil. Your heart's pounding, you get excited, play with a flame and you're ignited. Time out for crying, here comes a load of rain. Who wants it? That thrill of a warm embrace. Who needs it? No one but the whole human race. 'Cause love is a necessary evil, a very arbitrary, extraordinary evil. Natural thing that women and men do, can't be changed, there's nothing we can do. Love is a necessary evil. A necessary evil, a very arbitrary, extraordinary evil. Natural things that women and men do, can't be changed, there's nothing we can do. Love is a necessary evil. Since time began, the wisest of men have found this evil. Makes the world go round.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. You and I were talking before we jumped in here on mic about being entrepreneurial and being able to put a career together, which is especially interesting to me now because they talk about the gig economy. And I remember when everything was shifting economically a few years ago. And I was thinking, finally, we jazz musicians have been living this way forever.
Right.
We have these skills. But you and I were talking about the fact that a lot of musicians and artists don't have those skills. And I think of that especially because I come back to you graduating and immediately forming a theater company. And looking around and thinking, I have this group of friends. Let's call it a group. Let's do this. Let's juggle. Let's go to San Francisco. Using your creativity in that way, I find fascinating. And do you think that that's something that can be taught? Do you think it was your personality?
I don't know if it's something that can be taught, because the people who, there are some people I come across who are artists, and there's a lot of fear involved with asserting yourself or putting a stake in the ground and saying, this is what I want to do. I'm going to try and figure out how to get from point A to point B. There's something missing in a lot of people. So I don't know. In my particular case, I look at my father, who was an entrepreneur, he didn't even finish high school, but he was driven, and that's kind of my role model of, how there's this person in my past who I grew up with and I watched, who was very assertive and was very, yes, he was a man and I'm a woman and growing up in different times, but I think it was a big influence on me in a subconscious way. Mm. Just saying, you can figure this out. Also, I should say, I think now that I'm talking, this just came to me, but I think she was a huge influence now that I think about it. I worked for Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop, the puppeteer.
Really?
I worked for her for 6 or 7 years. And this woman who you might, if you just see her on TV, she's, sweet and smart and great entertainer. And, to me, she was the greatest ventriloquist.
I loved her.
The greatest ventriloquist who has ever lived. And I will say that because I've seen her up close and personal with Lamb Chop, and she makes me believe that Lamb Chop is a sentient being. So to me, she was brilliant, but she was, in her very sweet way, she was pushy, not in a bad way, but she was very assertive. She worked very, very hard. She was the hardest working person I had ever known, always working, always thinking, always, trying to rally her resources to get something that she had her eyes on. So I think, and I don't think I've ever really acknowledged that, but it just came to me. I really think I owe her a debt of gratitude because she was really an intense businesswoman.
I love that. And you had to be very young when you were working for her.
No, I wasn't young.
Ah. Well, that's interesting because, I'm thinking because I remember her when I was a kid, and I'm thinking,
yeah, me too. But I was, I was 3 years old when that show.
Right. So when that show, what was she doing then?
She did Lamb Chop's Play Along in the early 90s, or maybe the late 80s.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I came to her I came to her in 92.
Uh huh.
So she had already won some Emmys. Daytime Emmys for Lamb Chop's Play Along, which, she was writing it. She had a team, of course, but she was calling the shots. She was, getting her creative people around her and coming up with concepts and ideas. And it's like, oh, there's an idea for a song, so-and-so, please write this song with it. We're going to teach the kids this and that, and also with music. She also had a philosophy, and she wrote books about it too, which is, and I think it's very important for students of music or really anything, but when you're a music student, it's so clear. Everything is easy once you know how. Mm-hmm. That's what she would say. Everything is easy once you know how, which seems like an obvious statement, but it's not that obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're a little kid and you're frustrated like I was with your piano lessons, well, all you need to do is have someone say, that's okay, because just keep at it. Eventually, you will get to the next point.
I love that you bring up a woman from a different business. It's still show business, but who influenced you, because people always ask me what women in the business have influenced me. I've mostly known men.
Right.
Because that's who I've been. I mean, it's only recently singing, so it was mainly instrumentalists that I was around, that I was working with, that kind of thing. But I've had a number of women that it's come to me, I look back, that in different ways influenced me in the same way Sharon Lewis did with you. And those things mean so much. And I love to put that out on this show, that message, because people talk about mentoring and that brings with it, I think, a certain kind of obligation of time. And they don't realize that you can do something, just one thing, talking to someone, and that can have a huge influence, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could say one thing, it could change someone's life.
Exactly. And I'm curious for you, somebody who is so good at putting things together, producing, because you've done so many different things, and that I wish we had 3 hours to talk about those things that you've done. But putting a CD together for you, that's very interesting now, because we've both made albums,
right.
So we know what it was like then, and it's very different now. It's a through project, not each side, all of that. Your most recent CD, how did you go about putting that together conceptually? What was your thinking in that?
Crowded Heart, which
is a great name.
Thank you. Well, that's actually one of the songs, of course, on the album. My concept in it, I knew I wanted to make another CD. I have never had a theme for a CD. I've just picked tunes that I liked and I thought would play well. I am not a singer who sings a lot of standards. As I mentioned before, I'm someone who likes to kind of off the beaten track songs that are really cool. And I like to, you know, I think I'm exposing the audience to really cool tunes they may not have heard. But, the standards are brilliant. I mean, there's no getting away from that. They just are. And so I started coming up with, well, what if I pick songs that I think are standards, but they were written, you know, maybe within the last 20 years. So they're not Great American Songbooks. They're not from the 40s and 50s and 60s and 30s, you know, Broadway shows, etc. But they're from the living contemporary writers who are on the scene now, that you can go to Village Vanguard and hear Fred Hirsch. And, oh, by the way, he also wrote this incredible song, Endless Stars, that Norma Winstone, brilliant lyricist and singer, made into stars. You know, that sounds like a standard to me. So I've thought, you know what? This is what I want to do. I want to find songs that I think sound like standards and then present them to people, to singers, and go, here, sing them. Go. Go forth and sing. You know, these are great songs. You know, don't forget about these.
Love makes a drifting dream of can make a distant song from starlight. Love inspires poetry most every night. You love and then love delights. But time a way of dashing moonlight dreams. Tides create the waves that drown the starlight beams. And poetry can never be reality. At least that's what seems to me to be. Nothing of what love I see, of stars or of poetry. That's the way it has to be. Now that love has laughed at me. Thank you. nothing of what love I see.
Judy Wexler on Parisian Heartbreak from her CD, Crowded Heart. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons and from East Hampton Indoor Tennis, 8 indoor and 20 outdoor courts in a quiet, beautiful park-like setting. Visit ehit.ws for more information. Additional support is provided by jazzonthetube.com, the largest annotated collection of classic jazz videos online, from early jazz greats like Louis Armstrong to Thelonious Monk and other bebop masters. The collection also includes an extensive library of Afro-Cuban jazz. All are available with a free subscription at jazzonthetube.com. For a schedule of upcoming jazz-inspired programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can listen to podcasts of Jazz Inspired on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stride Queen. My guest is vocalist Judy Wexler. Here's Judy on Painting on Canvas from her CD, Crowded Heart.
We are like children, we're painted on canvases, picking up shades as we go. We start off with gesso, brushed on by people we know. Watch your technique as you go. Step back and admire my view. Can I use the colors I choose? Do I have some say what you use? Can I get some green and some blues? We're made by the pigment of paint that is put upon. Our stories are told by our hues. Of colors and time.
Talk about Circus Life. I particularly like that take.
Oh, good.
Yeah, talk about that.
That tune, Circus Life, was written by Luciana Sosa, Larry Klein, and David Bateau. And that's on Luciana's CD, Tide, that, you know, all her CDs have given her a lot of well-deserved recognition. She's really an amazing singer and composer. And she's also an incredible clinician, because I've taken some, or at least have been in the room while she's given some master classes. I love the attitude of the song. You know, the way Alan, I worked with Alan Pasqua on this CD, who arranged everything. To me, he's a total genius. And he, hers was a bossa, and he just made it into a samba. So it's, you know, but the lyrics are about modern life, you know, about being stuck in traffic, about, you know, being depressed, about, you know, all these having to get up for an early flight, and, you know, just all these
modern
things
dilemmas.
Yeah, all the modern dilemmas. And so I think that's kind of a really good description of just life right now, you know. So for me, it was a little emblematic, you know, and I tried to bring out some of the more humorous lyrics, but I just thought it was a great melody, great lyrics. And then what Alan did with it was just fabulous.
You find the strength, you lose your voice, you find some peace, you miss the noise, you find your chance, you crash your car, you lose your way and find your heart, you reach your goal and it's your end, you lose your life when life begins, you make it back. But you're not home. Where is that peace you've known? Go up in fire and smoke. You try to shake your misery. The cure is worse than the disease. You book your flight, you cancel twice. You long for beans and rice.
I'm envious of people like yourself who have had the courage and also taken the time to study and continue to study. And you've had great teachers. And I'm interested in your vocal teachers.
Because
you have such a great voice. But what have you learned from them? What did they do with you when you came in with your instrument, which you were born with, but you've obviously developed that. But you were singing in school as well when you were studying theater and all that. You were singing the whole way.
Yes. And I was, you know, I sang in musicals and, you know, I played piano from the time I was five.
Yeah.
And sang, you know, my father wouldn't make me sing things. But I, you know, I enjoyed it.
And you took piano lessons the whole time growing up?
I did. I took piano lessons throughout school from the age of five. And
classical?
It was classical. It wasn't pop. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd learn work on Debussy or mm-hmm. Bach or mm-hmm. you know, whatever.
But I'm curious about vocal teachers. What are the great things that you took from these teachers that you can think about that really influenced the way you sing?
It's hard coming up with something.
I studied
with Tamir Hendelman, mm-hmm. who's, you know, an accomplished pianist, but I didn't study piano. I studied mm-hmm. singing mm-hmm. with him.
And was that more technique?
Not at all. It was absolutely no technique. Interesting. It was more about the jazz vocabulary and coaching me to sing these, you know, we were working on standards at the time. But I think it was a lot of phrasing, coaching on phrasing. I also worked with Tom Garvin, who is, he's not around anymore, sadly, but he was a great pianist and arranger. And, you know, he played for Carmen, he played for Sarah, he played for Peggy Lee, he played for, you know, the greats. And I would coach with him and he'd say, okay, wait a minute. Carmen would sing it this way, you know, and he'd give me an example of how she would phrase something. And it's so, fantastic. So that, you know, that kind of stuff was very valuable. I did not study or intend or try to study improvisation, scat singing, because, you know, as I've gathered my inspirations for you in these tracks, I look at who I've given you and none of them were known as scat singers. So, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, although I love her, is not on the list. So it's not something I gravitated to as even wanting to listen to necessarily.
No, and this really interesting, you know, because it's you had instrumentalists giving you input, which I find fascinating because it comes up a lot that so many of the great singers were pianists themselves, or that even Frank Sinatra, that he was so influenced by Tommy Dorsey, all these people, that their phrasing came to them organically. And what I got from your list was that you were into storytellers, that it was about that much more than anything else. And certainly Blossom Dearie, everything she sang to me, you got that story.
Absolutely conversational.
Absolutely, you know, and you got it. And Carmen McRae. And you brought an interesting Irene Krall. Talk about this track.
Well, The Touch of Your Lips, I do not sing The Touch of Your Lips. So, you know, when I looked at Better Than Anything, the album with Junior Mance Trio, I looked at every track. I'm like, I could give you every track. Because I feel like I've played that over and over and over again. So The Touch of Your Lips is a great standard. I love the way she does it. She swings her tushy off. But I also just love that she is a straightforward singer. There is not one extra note, not one extra breath, not one extra anything. She gives you the story with a gorgeous voice and incredible phrasing. It's authentic and there's no fluff. It's like she, you know, it's interesting because I also studied, or I did some kind of, he didn't really coach me, but he was an LA pianist, Dick Shreve. And he said he lowered all of Irene's keys once she got sick because she died very tragically of breast cancer when she was only in her 40s. So before she died, apparently she had to lower all her keys. He, you know, he was working with her. And I said, Dick, why didn't Irene ever scat? And he said, because she was a grown-up. And I just thought that was funny. Well, but it's this prejudice that instrumentalists don't like.
That is so funny.
You know, they just don't like it.
And I love, but I really love that you say every note, she did exactly what needed to be done, because what was coming to me was E.B. White's Elements of Style, talking about writing and saying that every word must tell.
The touch of your hand upon my head, the love in your eyes that shine, and now at last that moment divine, the touch of your lips on mine, the touch of your lips upon. Lies in their soft caress, my heart forgets to beat. The touch of your hand
upon my head. The light in your eyes that shine. And now at last, that moment divine, with the touch of your lips, your lips.
Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm talking with vocalist Judy Wexler. You also brought me a Shirley Horn track that she sounds very different than the Shirley Horn I've heard. Even the timbre of her voice sounds different.
Right.
Talk about this.
Well, this Traveling Light, you know, I looked up, you know, I've known, you know, about Shirley Horn for many, many years, and I got to see her. I think I only saw her once at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel with her, you know, her little white glove. She took off. She didn't speak to the audience, I don't think, one time. It was kind of like, now I know why Miles Davis loved her. No, I just kidding. But I loved her singing, but, you know.
No, but it's very funny. I saw her where she was introduced by Oscar Peterson at Town Hall. And she walked on and just kept walking and walked off.
Oh, my God! That's hilarious.
That was classic. And he had to turn and walk off and get her and bring her back on. I thought,
she not know where the piano was?
Who knows? But it was an experience.
Hilarious.
Yeah, so, but I like that you had a similar experience. So continue.
This CD was the last album that she recorded before she went into her retirement, her temporary but long retirement to raise her daughter. And then she reemerged, I think, maybe in the 80s.
Right. So her voice sounded
very different,
too.
Okay, so this was from the mid-60s. So she had, like all of these singers that I'm presenting, you know, she had this more girlish sound.
And it's fascinating to hear.
Yeah, it is fascinating to hear.
Because it changes her approach as
well. Totally. And she's kind of more, you know, she hadn't gotten into the very lugubrious tempos that she was very famous for. And that she could sell a song with these very slow tempos. And again, every word had power because she could just wait and wait and wait and wait to come in. And you were with her. You know, you were right there with her.
No, she carried it off. Yeah, people don't realize how hard that is. The musicians accompanying her know how hard it
is. Yeah.
But I love this track because it's fun. It's fun to get a glimpse of how she started and to hear her in a very different way.
Don't be on the wrong side, looking on the right side. If you're on the right side, looking on the wrong side, everything you see don't really have to be, so stay on your side. Things look greener when they're on the other side. Seeing is believing, the looks are so deceiving when you're taken for a side. Things look greener when
Talk about I Took Your Hand.
I Took Your Hand is, and this is one of, in my, I just want to say too, that for the new album, Crowded Heart, I literally spent a year bouncing songs that I was finding to Alan Pasqua, who either gave it the thumbs up or the thumbs down, which was absolutely fine. That was part of our process, mm-hmm. that I wanted him to do that. I wanted him to give the thumbs down on something that absolutely wasn't, you know, wasn't making it in terms of the concept, which is modern standards. And also he had to feel that he could arrange it in a way that, you know, it had to speak to him too as the arranger. So I Took Your Hand was one of the very first songs that I decided on. I recorded this CD in two segments, five tunes in May and five tunes in November. What I like about this tune, the music is written by Enrico Peranunzi, who's, you know, he's around, he's on the scene, very, very well-known, prolific pianist, composer. His song was Fellini's Waltz, slowish waltz. And Lorraine Feather, who everybody knows at this point is a brilliant lyricist, wrote lyrics to me that absolutely reminded me of a seminal movie in my life, which was Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. The scene she paints with the lyrics reminds me of a modern version of the masked ball that everyone is attending, and how you can just maybe touch somebody's hand and shivers run up your spine because, wow, I don't even know what this person looks like, but there's something very attractive, you know, so, and I'm connected, but I don't know who they are. So I thought it was mysterious. It told this incredible story. And the feeling from this, the teller, the woman, is that she is so weak from just touching his hand. She doesn't even know if she could actually go through with the dance. So to me, it was like a beautiful story that it had graphic images in my head. So I was really drawn to it.
It was barely twilight when the string quartet began to play. At the stroke of 12, the dancers failed to pull their masks away. Then I saw you were the same as anyone, and the very room began to shine. I was trembling badly, but I took your hand in mine. Though in all my life I never once believed in second sight, something odd indeed, but just as real, came over me that night. Photographs of a thousand moments yet to be. I was on the ocean, I was drifting toward the land. I loved you when I took your hand.
When you sing a song either on stage or you're recording it, do you go into the same story each time, or are you, because you studied acting,
right.
We've talked about that you're interested in stories, you're a great storyteller, I can say as a person who's hung out with you. Do you go into the same story each time, or is it a different person? How do you approach that, or do you even think about a story?
Sometimes there are songs that automatically bring up people in my life. There's a song that I sing that I will always think about my mother when I sing this song. And I think about her saying the words to me. as I'm singing it. That works for me. There are other songs where I'm just thinking about the words and there's kind of no subtext. And then there are things that maybe there's not normally subtext, but then something will come up in the moment. I think it's always good to have a subtext. You know, I'm saying sometimes there isn't, but in a perfect world, I think it's good if you're
it's
just
helpful.
Like acting.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. In acting, selling, you've got to have something.
You know, I mean, singers really are storytellers, I don't care what kind of singer you are. You know, you still have to have that. You have to have, you know, I studied with Stella Adler for one insane summer quite a while ago. And she
lucky
would,
you.
Yes, lucky, but it was
crazy.
Really the most intimidating thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. But she
well, everything's
would
easy after that.
Yeah, you didn't die, so you're still alive. But she
come on,
would
be positive.
She'd always say this phrase, reach my mind. She would go, reach my mind. And I was like, reach my mind. You know, that really means something. Because when you don't reach someone's mind, you fall flat. You know, and the story falls flat and you're not serving the song. So it's almost like, you know, you can take that and then you can extend it. Reach my mind goes to the audience, you know, and reach my mind is also match your partner's intensity. The stuff that resonates with you as a listener is because the person did bring up something
of themselves.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I find the biggest compliment is if someone says, you must have really had a sad love affair when I've sung something really sad and I've just had a story in my head.
Right.
It's like projecting that onto an actor that does a great job and they think the actor's actually been a serial killer. No, that's a bad example. I was making that up. But you know what I mean. You're
right,
always hearing
sure.
actors say that people believe that that's actually who they are.
Right, sure.
Well, that's a big compliment.
Right.
They have huge powers of empathy
and imagination.
And imagination and an ability to convey it, which is what a singer has to do. Well, this is great. You came and visited me in Rustic Canyon. We're both the two California girls.
That's
you're bringing
right, the
out
two
my,
Judys.
I know.
And
you're bringing
I love
it back
where
out.
You are. It's amazing.
Isn't this a great
all you
spot?
Listeners, you can't hear this. You can't see this, but it's
I, yeah,
it's
I have
an amazing
everybody
place.
Describe it, though. It's so much fun for me to do my LA interviews because I always do it here in Rustic Canyon. And it's describe this house. I have people describe it because everybody describes
oh,
it a different
way.
Oh,
that's very interesting. I think, it's woodsy. There's certainly a lot of eclecticism in the artwork, which is amazing. I think the two staircases, you know, that really got my attention.
No, I love
you know, like on the roof, one going up and one going down.
There's stairs everywhere, and we're doing it in a different room than I usually do it. We're sort of in the little alcove off the kitchen. We're in the back log cabin, but people will see pictures of us if they go to the site. They'll get to see pictures of us standing in various places, and we have a very sunny day here. And it's about 8 degrees in New York, so I'm glad to be out here. So it's great.
LA's the place.
It is. Thank you, Judy.
Thank
this was
you.
Great fun. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. This was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been listening to my conversation with Judy Wexler. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another celebrated creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineers are J.D. Allen and Curtis Hydoff. You can download podcasts of Jazz Inspired from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar.
Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is made possible with generous support from our listeners and from Steinway & Sons and from Sag Harbor Florist. Visit sagharborflorist.net. For a schedule of upcoming programs, to sign up for our email newsletter, or to find out how you can personally support Jazz Inspired, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Stride Queen. Additional support is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. Jazz Inspired is also sponsored in part by Page at 63 Main in Sag Harbor, New York, serving organic microgreens and vegetables grown on their own energy-efficient indoor and outdoor aquaponic farms. Better taste, happier planet. Visit Page at 63 Main at opentable.com. And special thanks to Henry and Gilda Block and to the Ken Kolker Foundation. For more information, visit jazzinspired.com or judycarmichael.com.